So yeah. You and I are having a discussion about something that's much more further down the road than I think where people actually are in our society sometimes.
But that's why I value your input too, because you have so much more familiarity with the terrain between reality and where I am, you
it's
know?
Rocky terrain too. And yeah. I got a helmet and I'm like trudging along and they're trying to run school buses over me at every turn.
Oh boy, welcome back to the show, everybody. Today is March 20th, and we continue with our 2015 Liberty Forum discussion series. Very pleased to welcome back an old friend of the show, Kate Baker. She is the executive director of the Network for Educational Opportunity. You can check them out at networkforeducation.org. So Kate gave a talk called Moving to the Free State with Children, a discussion of education options in New Hampshire. And immediately following that talk, Kate and I sat down in front of a live studio audience to discuss parent empowerment. We also fielded some questions and comments from the crowd. So as always, I look forward to your feedback. Leave your comments if you have them. You can do it on our Facebook group, search Facebook for School Sucks Project, or at our website. SchoolSucksProject.com. Here we go. Okay, so welcome to School Sucks live from Liberty Forum in front of a studio audience here. Listen to them. A little trick you can do is when you're editing, you can actually clip that part. You can set up a bunch of tracks and you can just layer one over the other. And
because there's really 500 people here.
Like rip-roaring
500
applause.
People.
I'm joined by Kate Baker. Welcome back to the show.
So happy to be here.
I enjoyed your talk.
Thank you very much.
You wanted to argue today? I don't think
no,
we're going to.
No, I never want to argue. I just... Schooling and education and learning is such a challenging topic to talk about.
It is. Well, first of all, you've been on the show a couple times. First time you were on the show was like 2.5 years ago. You were on at Liberty Forum a couple years ago. But if my audience doesn't know you...
Sure. I'm the executive director of the Network for Educational Opportunity. We're a scholarship organization in New Hampshire that empowers families to have mobility, to be able to choose the school that's the right fit for their child, or homeschooling. We provide scholarships for that also.
And what was the talk you just gave?
I just talked about education options that exist in New Hampshire. We talked a little bit about private schools, public schools, charter schools. I got to say that homeschooling is my favorite option that exists for families. And so that was fun for me. I like to talk about parent empowerment. So that's really what we were talking about.
We need new branding for homeschooling.
Branding?
That word is no good. Like,
what do you mean it's no good?
It's really no good. And I'll tell you why.
Okay,
but
let's hear
the
it.
Public schools have all kinds of great words for things like outcomes-based education.
Okay.
And No Child Left Behind and Common Core. And it really all just sounds so great. But we don't have any good branding for homeschooling. Like, that's just sad. Home sounds boring. Schooling sounds shitty.
Okay.
So we need new words to talk about this experience, you know, of actually being educated outside of these buildings.
I mean, would you say that authentic learning, you could call it?
I like that.
Homeschooling?
We started using home education on my show.
Okay.
But it still has the word home in it. And I think what people picture when they hear the word home is just mom, like, sitting around the kitchen table with a bunch of kids.
Schooling at home.
Saying, oh, I wish I was a teacher, you know?
And most people that are homeschooling are actually not home at all.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like world education.
Right.
So.
Right. Because they might choose classes that their child goes to, or co-op groups, or they might go to the grocery store, right? And think about what you can learn at the grocery store. You might learn math. You might learn measurements. You might learn, I mean, you could learn a million things. Think about what you could learn interacting with the elderly, for example.
Absolutely.
Right. Interesting. Okay, so I'll think about that a little bit, because I'm decent at branding.
Yeah.
So how would I brand homeschooling in a way that was actually comprehensive? You know what? I think the challenge would be that in homeschooling, there's a equally diverse ways that people homeschool their children as there are schools and buildings.
That's true.
Okay, so I don't know if you could brand it, right? Because think about how many different types or models. There might be as many models of homeschooling as there are individuals doing it.
You just need a word that could be the umbrella for all those things. You know what I mean?
I don't think you can. I don't think you can do it.
But I like authentic education. That seems like it covers a lot.
Or learning.
Yeah.
Learning without school. No, but see, that's not the case either, because a homeschooler might very well choose a course.
It's not. I'm looking for like Coke is it. You know, okay. Like something catchy. Like,
I mean, I like unschooling, but not all homeschoolers unschool. And so that would be an unreasonable branding to give them.
I just feel like it's the word school. The big project with my show is that we want to separate the words schooling and education. Like people, you talk to people all the time who think those words are more synonymous than antonymous, right?
Yes.
So I want to separate them.
People do equate education with school buildings.
Right.
For some reason.
And remember, we even talked about this before. I said, be nice to have a building, though. Remember, like a place where kids can go as far as alternative school. Like parents like the idea that their kids are in a building.
Yes, people
the day.
Have. We did talk about that. I remember that. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
People have trouble conceptualizing something unless it actually exists, Brett.
Yeah.
Let's give it to them, okay?
Yeah.
So you're talking about a philosophy.
Yeah.
And you're talking about an idea.
Yeah.
You're talking about education as an idea.
Right.
I mean, I think that people are beginning to move in that direction. The people that I speak to are starting to think about education as at least, you know, public schools, charter schools, private schools, homeschooling.
Right.
Which is a step in the right direction, considering for some people, when they think of education, they only think of their local public schools. I actually was in a meeting once where someone started to talk about education. And then immediately in the next section of the discussion, they focused on the local district public schools and the pluses and minuses of them as if that was the only education in the area.
So this segues into the here to there problem.
Oh, my. I mean, this is a really big... It's going to take quite a while,
well,
I think.
When we first talked, like years ago, especially when I first started this show, I was like a real purist and an extremist.
I really would like you to stay that way, if you would.
Well, no, but I wanted to recognize the span, right?
Yeah.
So when we first talked, or in the beginning of the show, I said, no politics... No charter schools, no vouchers.
Okay.
All of that is just a trap. It's going to keep us stuck where we are.
Sure.
It's not respectful to children.
Okay.
But as I've had more experience, right, and I look at the trillion-mile span from what my ideal education is to where we actually are today, like I said in your talk, we need to put some rest stops along the way. So I'm much more open
to
incrementalism. Roadmaps are good.
To having people have ownership over their own education, or how about at least the parents having some ownership. In some circumstances, in our existing world today, there are some places where parents really still don't have ownership of their children's education. So maybe that's step one.
Now that,
maybe
terrifies.
That's step one towards... having the individual have ownership over their education.
Right. And that terrifies the progressives, the people who control education. And it's so interesting that, you know, 150 years ago, when people were fighting them on setting up like the school system,
They
said, yeah, but everybody's so dumb and dangerous, you know, and we really need to intervene. And
so
like,
weird
here
mindset.
We are, but here we are 150 years later, and we're saying now, like, well, maybe people should be like in charge of their own healthcare and their ability to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And these same people are going, yeah, but everybody's so dumb
and
dangerous.
Okay, well, listen, you don't go shopping
we really
for
shouldn't
a
let
Jaguar.
Them do that.
No, you don't go shopping for a Jaguar.
Right.
Unless you have the money to buy a Jaguar, right?
Says
so,
you.
I mean, I know nothing about Jaguars because I don't have the money to buy a Jaguar, so I don't go shopping for a Jaguar.
Right.
If you gave me $100,000 and you said, this money is to buy a Jaguar, go buy one. And that was the only thing I could, of course, I would give it to kids, but say you made said I had to use it for that.
But you
then
would,
I might
being
go,
Kate Baker, you would go buy an actual Jaguar.
And you'd commit. Okay. So,
okay.
Say I actually, you said this money is to buy a Jaguar. So then I might actually start to look at what kind of models of Jaguars, not the rare Jaguars, but the you know, that kind of. So I might go actually look at what kinds of models of Jaguars are available. Like, I don't even know what they cost. What are they available? I might go to the dealership and like test drive a Jaguar and like, you know, I'd be so awesome in a Jaguar, first of all, but I wouldn't shop for it unless I have it, right?
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to do is help parents shop for Jaguars, shop for schools like they would shop for Jaguars. They don't think about education in schools right now like I don't think about buying a Jaguar.
Right.
You
no,
get it?
You're right. You're right.
Okay. I don't think about going to the car dealership because it's not a choice for me. But that's how schooling is for so many people in our society right now. The economy, their income traps them in this geographic, it's called time warp kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
place
yeah.
where their only choice is that local district public school. You might say, go ahead and homeschool to them, and they'll
right.
be like, what are you talking about?
So they think the
I
school
work full-time.
Options are the Jaguar. Oh, by the
Maybe.
Way, in Great Britain, they say Jaguar.
Oh,
they're
Jaguar.
Some, they're snobs. So, but they think that school options, not like the whole school experience, but
okay.
the school options is what you're saying. It's something that's out of my reach.
Yes. They're
okay.
not even
okay.
thinking about it at all.
Well, plus,
like,
they,
I'm
like,
not thinking about buying a Jaguar at all. Jaguar.
Right. Very good.
I'm not thinking about buying a Jaguar at all.
Right.
Instead, I'm driving the Volkswagen. You know,
yeah,
I'm not thinking
yeah.
about a Jaguar at all. So to be able to have people start to think about education or schools or any of this stuff, it needs to be a possibility for them, right? And currently, the monopoly system
yeah.
doesn't make it a possibility for very many people. They're trapped in that monopoly, and it's not a something they can even think about or look at. And so that's, I think, step one, is creating or enabling people to be able to look beyond that monopoly system and say, okay, maybe there's something else out there that I should consider. And only after they could start to consider it will they become informed enough to actually have that empowerment. And then you might get further down the road to where you're talking about.
How do you think you get parents to care, though? Right? Because first of all, there's parents who want to tell themselves a story. Like you said in the thing, everything is fine. This is school. Somebody else takes care of this. Like,
sure.
you know, I'd call a plumber
sure.
if there was a bathroom-related problem. And I have the teachers and the administrators and these experts that will deal with my child's education, and schooling is education. I don't want to hear anything else about it. So you have a lot of parents who just aren't invested. That has been...
But I think that's the societal problem and the Jaguar problem.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to go shopping for a school...
Right.
...unless you think that's a possibility.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
They're not... thinking about our society has created a pervasive environment of put your kid on the bus.
Yeah.
They go there, they come home. You don't think about it.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's because you don't really have a lot of options to think about unless you're a wealthy person, in which case then you can just do whatever you want, right? And so you notice that people that have the resources do make choices.
Sure.
And shop for schools, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But we can't expect everyone to do that when it is a trap situation of a system.
Have you ever talked to a parent, like maybe in the early stages of these realizations, and they do the whole "but it was good enough for me" kind
I mean,
of argument?
Sure. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
That's a really frustrating one.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's going to take a lot of. I mean, that's an evolution, I think, of the species problem rather than necessarily an education problem.
The reason why I wanted to get into,
I mean, I didn't wear a seatbelt when I was a little kid in the car. I sat on a little bump in the front.
You sat on the, I stood on the bump in the back.
right. But yet, I mean, I wouldn't do that with my own child. I wouldn't put them not
no,
in
no, no. It's true because it's not good enough for me is not good enough for, it's not true for anything else.
I mean,
it's
that's
not true
a human
for medicine. It's
thing.
Not true for technology. It's not true for safety. It's only true for school and spanking. It was done to me, and I'm fine.
Do we want to get into the spanking discussion?
No, we don't have. That's another topic. But everything else, it's fine for everything else to evolve. But schooling and spanking, when it comes to those things, it's like a lot of parents, I think, just don't want to look at their own. Like, yeah, I got through it. Whatever, you have to do it too. Sour grapes, tough luck.
Or yes, it was good for someone. I mean, that's an evolution or intellectual discussion, though, or problem, right?
Right. Yeah.
When someone is in a This is what I can do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is what we can do, is when someone is in a situation where we can help them to be able to go to a private school or homeschool, then let's do it.
Right, yeah.
Right? How about that? How about that as a start, right? Yeah. That is a start. Instead of trying to change kind of hearts and minds about individual, you know, an education philosophy and shouldn't the kid be in charge of their own education, how about let's at least make it possible for people who want out of that public school system to get out?
It's right? such a massive systems thinking kind of problem where any criticism of the school system might result in somebody coming back and saying, yeah, but what about the poor? And you have to be able to compartmentalize things too. Like, that's a separate problem. That's important. It's something to think about.
James Tooley wrote The Beautiful Tree and he already did all that
that's
research.
That's right. Yeah, Jody about, talked to me
yeah,
about
he
that.
He already
this
did
morning.
All that research about what people that don't have a lot of resources do to mm-hmm. get an education for their children.
Yeah.
And it's not really, I mean, people would choose private schools just like they would choose public schools, and philanthropists would, if everything was a private system, philanthropists would just make sure that lower income children had the same opportunities. I mean, right now, actually, they don't have the same opportunities.
No, that's true.
So you can argue that the reason public education should exist is to be able to educate poor, low-income children.
Yeah.
But currently, if you look at the real world, I mean, suburban, affluent children are the ones that are getting a good education, and poor kids in urban areas are like getting terrible education. So it doesn't equal equity. It doesn't
equity. Right.
That doesn't make any sense, but you know what I mean.
It brings up one of the concerns I had when I was listening to you talk is most of my experience, my early professional experience was working in this boarding school.
Right.
So one of the themes of your talk was empowering parents, right?
Yes.
I have seen some bad parents, right?
Sure.
Carlos, who's been on my show with his CPS history, we've seen some bad parents.
I would
right?
argue, though, that that's one out of
it's rare
enough people that we wouldn't create laws or impose our opinions on others because of one or two or three things that went wrong. That's not a libertarian idea.
No, I agree. It's just it's a concern that I have, and I think it's a concern that a lot of people have, that, you know, reading case files of kids who had been taken out of their homes, kids who had been put in foster homes, and, you know, even some forms of religious extremism, that there's I would look for more nuance in the whole empower the parents thing.
I wouldn't.
Okay, tell me more.
You love having this because I wouldn't, because as much as I want. Listen, I want people to respect my views.
Yeah.
Okay? I figure in my own head, and most people think this way, they think that they're mostly right. Okay?
From my experience, they do think
that's
that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so they think they're mostly right. I'm going to just give you, I'm more flexible probably than most people, as you know, but let's just say my beliefs are very ingrained.
Yeah.
And that I believe what I believe, and I'm going to go about my business acting on those beliefs.
Yeah.
Okay? I want people to respect that.
Right.
I'm entitled to my own beliefs.
Sure.
And thus, I should be entitled to make my own decisions and thus, frankly, educate my children the way I would want to. And who the heck are you to say that I shouldn't do that?
I agree. I think, again, it comes back to what to tell. It comes back to PR, which is a big part of this.
Sure,
and you know it is, right?
Fine.
So what are the answers to the questions when somebody, like my whole thing, like, yeah, what about the poor? And if you're talking about like school choice in New Hampshire and the Chicago inner city, they're like two different projects, right? They're not the same. Someone can't say, yeah, but what about poor kids in Harlem or Chicago?
I mean, we have poor kids here in Manchester.
That's true. That's true.
That are trapped in, frankly, urban school environments that aren't meeting their needs.
Right. But I've had this experience where conversations need some redirection.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I'm explaining why we're not going to get bombed by the Japanese again suddenly. Like, people can go off course and try and justify things as they are in strange ways. That's what I mean.
Yeah. I just feel like if we respected the individual more.
Yeah. Okay.
And when I say empowering parents, I mean respecting them as individuals.
Agree.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then I feel like that would become the pervasive mindset. And thus, perhaps their children would also then be empowered as well.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I live in a utopia. I don't. I live in the real world and I work with these families and children all the time, right? They call the Network for Educational Opportunity and they say, I'm in this school. My child's being bullied. What do I do? It might be the first time that someone has ever heard, well, maybe you should look at what other schools are available, and perhaps your child shouldn't go back to that school. I actually said that to someone once, and they were like, what? And I said, well, if your child is being injured and they're not safe at the school they're attending, perhaps you should take them out of the school. I mean, that's where people are at, just so you know, that hearing that is revolutionary to many people still.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you and I are having a discussion about something that's much more further down the road than I think where people actually are in our society sometimes.
But that's why I value your input too, because you have so much more familiarity with the terrain between reality and where I am, you know?
It's rocky terrain too. And I got a helmet and I'm like trudging along and they're trying to run school buses over me at every turn.
Like you've been grinding away for a long time at this. Like you used to, before you were doing school choice, you were actually trying to make improvements. Well, tell us about that a little bit, like in actual school districts, public school districts only. Is that correct?
I mean, I have lived in Manchester where we are right now.
Kids, yeah.
My entire life. And initially, I started a group called the Greater Manchester Alliance for the Gifted, which was a support group for parents of gifted children, because many instances gifted children get bored and then they become behavior problems in the class and the parents don't know what to do with them.
Right.
And so they would come to this support group and we would talk about, okay, so your child is acting out and getting detention and what schools might challenge them and where could they go. But I didn't really have any solutions at that point.
Right.
I was just kind of talking to people about what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did work or try to work with the Manchester School District here where I lived to try and put a gifted and talented program in. And that didn't work. I spent a couple of years on some boards. You know, when people assign you to boards, actually know that that's just like trying to keep you busy. Okay?
Yeah.
They're trying to keep you busy. So I spent time on some boards and advisory boards. And then I was put on another committee to design a magnet program, which would have been an inter-district choice program. And we designed this magnet program, and then that went nowhere. And I actually did have my child withdrawn actually from the school while I tried to work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of course, I had a child that was in a public school that couldn't stay there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was too, she had a teacher that was like, well, if you're so smart, blah, blah, blah. It just didn't work. Okay, so I withdrew the child and then I started to try and facilitate positive change because, I mean, that's what I like to do. I like to help people. I like to facilitate change. And it just didn't really work. And so it kind of drove me to realize that change, I think, will come from the outside and not the inside.
If
that makes sense.
Exactly. So
now
I
run
up.
The lifeboat company.
Right.
Now I run the lifeboat company where if someone's having a difficulty in a school, I just row my little lifeboat company by and say, jump on, jump on, jump on. And, you know, I can just help as many kids as I can, you know? I mean, if you think about it, yes, the entire public school system needs reform.
Right.
But
right.
I'm not going to wait for them to fix that. I mean, I'm going to help the kids as they now.
Yeah.
Right? So if I can help even one child, right?
Yeah.
Then it's really important to do that. And I did start a charter school and a private school and some homeschooling groups and stuff like that. I like this work. I feel like it's kind of striking at the root, right? Because if an individual grows up and actually gets education, learning, schooling, whatever the word is, I would love it for humans to grow up in respectful environments and actually get an education that maybe meets their individual needs.
Yeah.
And then they would be the voters of tomorrow. Right?
Yeah.
And so I kind of want those voters of tomorrow to actually have what they need today instead of being in that system that really is totally dysfunctional, as everyone knows. And you can put band-aids on it and try and change it and do things, but it's dysfunctional. And so I feel like it makes sense to just at least help as many kids as I can.
Yeah, I'm really surprised with how much more leverage I had outside the system talking about these things or thinking about or caring about these things even.
Right.
So the reason why I wanted to tell you that story is because it really closely parallels my experience, where for over a decade I worked in state-controlled and state-funded private, air quotes, private schools, where all their funding was coming from other states. It was essentially a boarding school. And then I spent, you know, a few more years working on the periphery of the public system as a tutor and a college consultant. And it seemed like every year, every 2 years, every small period of time, I was reevaluating and saying, ah, I don't feel like part of the solution here. And I would seek another, you know, career, but with the skills I already had. So, you know, I was a teacher's aide, and then I was the lead teacher of a different specialized program, and then I went and taught history at another school. And I went
just
into,
so you know, I got to tell you that the establishment really dislikes people like us who have a background in education and now also do this kind of discussing policy work, because part of their thing is that they'll say, okay, well, the education reform movement or people that facilitate change don't have any experience in education. And then I'm like, oh, well, I actually ran a school and I was a teacher for a really long time. And they're like, they don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
People that do, you know, talk about policy, but also have a background in education.
Right. But I'm not a whistleblower.
I wish more people did that. I wish more people from the education field would step out and start to facilitate change. That might work, you know.
Do you know why that's so rare, though?
Well, it's, I mean, they're oppressed.
Well, there's lots of, there's lots of aspects to it. It's quite the tangled web. I mean, the union is a big part of it politically. But think about what it takes to have a realization like that when you're, like, you've probably talked to public school teachers about these issues, and you see the reaction sometimes.
Actually,
that you
the
get.
Teachers get it.
That really surprises me.
A lot
that hasn't
of teachers,
been my experience.
I mean, maybe I'm finding the right teachers.
If they're in the same places where you are,
perhaps,
they're probably
perhaps
more
I'm talking to a,
interested.
Because I know a lot of teachers that understand that any one school to think that any one school building could meet the needs of all the children in it is slightly delusional.
Right. Sure.
Right.
Yeah. I understand.
So at least they get that part. They know that kids shouldn't necessarily be trapped in those buildings, because it's delusional to think that a building and the staff inside of a building could meet the needs of every individual.
It is.
Doesn't make sense.
But at the same time, those questions that they have is calling their whole profession, and I think a lot of them, their worth into question, which is why initially that curiosity, that never really takes place for most people. And it's a shame. So part of my whole message, part of my whole project is trying to craft a better way of talking to people who are deeply emotionally invested in the current system, in like, well, just at least think about these things, just at least explore.
I mean,
and
the
look
brain
outside.
Research is very helpful. The brain research about how people learn.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's a piece of it that you can share that's from an outside perspective that is science, that really isn't necessary. It's not really deniable.
Yeah.
Right? And so you could share with people that are in establishment school buildings, public or private, brain research about how people actually learn. That might be productive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Because
I agree.
If you were to share with the people in the buildings that children learn by doing and by exploring and by following their interests, and that humans learn naturally when they're driven towards solving a problem.
Yes.
Then perhaps you could facilitate change in the way that you're hoping that it goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally agree. So we've got about 15 minutes left, and we had some people come in from your talk, so I wanted to see if we could take a few questions. You'd be up for that?
I mean, sure.
Or comments. If people just have comments, that's fine.
Yeah. I'm
anyone?
Happy to take questions.
We've got a microphone. You want to come up to the microphone? And if we maybe have time for three, so we'll try to do like 5-minute segments per question or comment. Welcome to the show, Don.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And your guest is?
Kate.
Okay. I just retired from the school board in my town after 12 years. So a lot of the things that you were saying are right on the money, and a couple of things need a little bit of clarification. I love the part about the teachers get it. The teachers get it. Now, the problem is the administration and the top-down. You know, the principal wants this, the superintendent wants that, the school board, blah, 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 right on up the line. But the teachers in the classroom definitely do get it. And if you talk to them one-on-one, alone, more or less, they'll tell you, oh, don't tell anybody, but I'm a sort of...
It does seem like it's a systemic problem.
Yeah.
With the way the system is set up and designed and implemented, the fact that everyone stays attached to it doesn't necessarily make any sense. You know, it does seem like when the teachers are in charge of a school, that it does function much better. The closer education gets to parents and teachers and children, the better it is.
No question.
So it seems like that's why I think the charter schools in New Hampshire are doing a pretty good job, because they're mostly started by groups of parents and teachers, and they seem much more responsive to the actual student wants and needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you do that, then the kids do better. And
absolutely.
So it does seem like that's why the charter schools do better than the, you know, traditional public schools, because they're more responsive, and that's because the teachers and parents are in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can remember we had a group of parents. I don't know when time you want to get some more people in there.
Another couple minutes is fine.
Okay. You let me know.
Okay, sure.
Just so you know, Don Gorman actually is famous in New Hampshire already.
I believe it.
He precedes me in notoriety.
He had a cardio with his name on it.
Hey, I came prepared.
Was it that you were state rep for many years?
Yeah, I was state rep for eight years, four terms.
And you did some training of some other?
I have been training freshman legislators for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm starting my fifth year now.
Yeah.
They're basically Democrat, Republican, forget that. They're liberty-minded people.
Yeah.
And they are awesome. They are really doing a lot of good things up there, and it just gets better every year.
That's great.
And I'm going to be around for the day, so if you want to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I'll either be in here or out in the big main room there, and we could chat a little more.
Sure.
That would be
by
great.
By all means. Kate, nice seeing you again.
Nice seeing you.
And do you get up to the State House at all?
I try to avoid the State House, Don.
Oh, no, don't do that.
We did.
No,
they actually did
up.
Try
let
to.
Let me show you how the game is played.
They did try and repeal the education tax credit again this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we did win.
Yes.
Yeah, already. Yeah.
Stop by and see me if you're up there.
Yes, sir.
All right, this gentleman and then Edward.
Yeah, my name's Edward Stamis.
All right. What's your question or comment?
My comment is I'm a physics teacher.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about this from a different perspective. I really like what I've heard from Kate and the other speakers here in terms of giving students more of a choice in their education, giving parents more of a choice in their children's education too. I definitely support that. But I think another angle on this is the economy, right? We want to, or at least I think it's important that we help our economy.
Yep.
I don't think it's in very good shape right now.
When you say we help our economy, I would want a little more detail.
Okay, about, so what okay. I'm saying is...
Well, do you hate those we's and ours,
what I'm
I know
saying
already.
Is education working to give students employment opportunities.
Okay, sure.
So yeah. I'm coming from the perspective of a physics teacher. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that most of the students in the school that I work at now are just not interested in physics at all. They're not interested in, for the most part, pursuing something that will...
I mean, Edward, I have to admit, I'm not really interested in physics either.
Well, not everybody's going to be, but what I'm pushing back on is kind of the idea that adults should just not give children the truth, the big picture about what opportunities are available to them. It's sort of our right responsibility as adults to tell them, well, you know, the world's not really, you know, what you think it is. Most of the students that I work with,
I mean, do
they
we really have to wreck their delusions at a young age? Can
well,
we just
no, they,
let them
no,
be
I,
happy
I
for a little while?
They want to be a rock star. They want to play in the NFL.
I'm for that, Edward. I'm for giving them or sharing, telling a kid that they can be a rock star.
Well, but there's how many people get to be rock stars? How many people get to be in the NFL?
I don't care how many. I would want to tell them they could be a rock star, Brett. Back me up here.
I can actually.
I just don't think it's realistic.
I can see it. I can see it from the middle. Like as soon as somebody understands odds and statistics, like maybe that would be a good time. Like maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 is not the time.
Okay.
But once math starts involving like the odds of being, well, the odds of being Bieber. I mean, that's incalculable. But the odds of, you know, the odds of being a successful.
I always dreamed of being Bieber.
The odds of being a successful musician are one in.
You know, I'm a jazz singer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and I chose to do this work instead of music.
Right.
Specifically. Right? And so I think that it's more important. I hate to tell you this, but I do believe that you can do anything. I do believe you can do anything you set your mind to.
Okay.
I mean, and so I wouldn't say to a human ever that I wanted to limit their possibilities.
I'm not talking about limiting anything. And I'm a musician too, and I understand the importance of art and music, but I just don't see a lot of jobs in art and music. I don't see a lot of jobs in journalism. I see a lot of jobs in sciences. I see a lot of jobs in medicine. And I think it's already, I'm coming from a perspective of a high school teacher here. I think maybe a lot of the discussion's been around younger children. I'm coming from a perspective of a high school adult who is in a position where I need to tell young people, you know, this is how the world is. And if you want to be successful financially, don't try to take the one in a million odds of being that football player, but maybe pursue that on the side, pursue the music, whatever it is on the side, but also
responsibility?
Have.
Do you think that's a parent responsibility, though, to be the one that
I agree with Kate on
directs
that.
Their children or provides them with that level of insight into perhaps, for example, I can share with you that I've had discussions with my own children about their talents. And what they're good at and what they like to do and what they're good at doing and how do you think that maybe the things you're good at could converge with some of these things that people want done in our society.
Right.
I mean, I think that's a parent's job.
Yeah,
and that
definitely.
Perhaps the teacher's job is when upon request, as you've been requested to teach physics, right, upon request to divulge information. Content.
But also, I think, like, I agree with the whole John Holt conception, too, of not teaching subjects and, you know, teaching.
Well, the forest and the trees is a whole different discussion.
It's part of this. It could be entered in right there. And I know, obviously, the way the system is set up today, that's very difficult to if you have a class, not that class size matters, but as much. But if you have a class of 30 or 40, it is hard to teach individuals, especially with.
I don't think so, as a teacher, just so you know.
No, I think it's more difficult, especially with the constraints that the system has put on teaching as far as standards and adherence.
Sure, again, that's a systemic problem.
Oh, of course, yeah, of course it's a systemic problem.
The way it's designed.
So I think that there is maybe a place, if it is asked for by students, there is a place for counsel like, what do you think of this thing that I'm doing? And not just giving them statistics that show them they're not going to be able to do it, but treating them like individuals and saying, well, you know, why is that important to you? If you have time. I mean, I know the system wears everybody down. So
I would say, too, presenting to them exciting opportunities in your field makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I love to talk to students about facilitating change and working in nonprofits. And being doing activism. That's really fun for me. Like, I can share that with kids at a different level that other people can't, right? Because my whole life's like that. So I've gone to schools, actually, and done sessions for high schoolers about change and advocacy work and how you can, you know, make change in your own neighborhood and things like that. So maybe that's what you're talking about, is perhaps you want to share with students opportunities that exist in the science fields.
Yeah.
I mean, you sort of shifted it and said, is it the parents' or the teacher's responsibility? What I'm saying is it's the adult's responsibility to tell children the truth about our economy, right, and where the jobs are. And if we're not telling them that, we're, in a sense, lying to them.
I think that there's a consideration for that. I mean, I was a freshman in college in 1995. I went for communications, right? I tell this story on the show all the time. So it was great as the digital revolution happened in the real world. They taught us how you laid out a newspaper in 1976. You know, so that, yeah, when I got out into the real world, I was like, oh, well, I have a degree in communications history. That's too bad. I balance that with just being a student of the history of like the progressive movement in the 20th century. And whenever I hear conversations about how we'll use schooling to plan the economy, it gives me like ants in my pants a little
bit. I'm not like, talking about just, planning the
no,
economy.
I know you're not.
I'm talking
I know
about
you're
the
not.
Way the economy is currently set up and the direction it's going. And it's very clear that it's going in a direction of more automation, fewer minimum wage, like factory type jobs, and more engineering jobs. That's obvious. That's a fact. So if we don't tell students that these are the opportunities that are going to be available to you,
yeah,
right? Instead, if we don't tell them that, and instead we're telling them pursue their interest, that's great. I think everybody should pursue their interest, but we also have to be careful about it. And we have to say, okay, some interests are not going to result in as much economic benefit for you as others.
If that's a true statement, that's fine. As long as it's not packaged with any kind of discouragement, it's just like, hey, these are the
I do have a daughter
where,
who's a professional dancer too, I got to tell you that.
But I just I like, can think of like
I mean
so,
you can make money doing a lot of things. You can support yourself doing a range of creative and exciting things. Yeah. I mean, again, I would say that I really do believe that humans have limitless potential. So, for example, take your discussion about markets and economy, okay, and imagine that humans and society solve problems in the same way that individuals do, which when the problem exists, then humans react and thus work to solve that problem, right? If I'm trying to build a house and I don't know how to nail the board, I'm like, I keep trying it, I figure out how to nail the board, I get someone to help me nail the board, right? So if what you say holds true, that in the future that jobs will exist in these certain areas, then it's natural that humans would move to acquire the skills and fill those jobs. Just like you would say, if humans had a problem, you know, like people will say the free market will solve it, right? So if there's an opportunity in business where someone can make money, usually suddenly there's a product there. And now we have cell phones that have no cords, right? So I believe that instead of trying to push people in a direction, it makes more sense for them to become thinking, functioning, autonomous people who can solve problems and do research and figure things out, in which case then they have the skills to be able to even acquire additional skills to do the jobs that you say would be available. How's that?
That's good. And I would just add to that, you know, to along with what you said, few situations are made worse by more information. You know, we're going to move on to one last question. If you want to talk more, because I actually like,
he's awesome.
I do this show, School Sucks Podcast, and I see, you know, teachers, and I try to run after them and say, hey, will you talk to me? And they just run away. So I would love to talk to you more. I mean, I'll be
Absolutely.
Around all night. That would be great. Edward, thank you so much for participating.
Thanks.
And we'll take one last question. Pam had her hand up, and I will try to, you know, at some point, address the other ones people have.
Well, I'm a teacher. I won't run away. And I teach in a public school, too.
Right.
So I do see what's going on, and I have more of a comment to make more than a question. I know we have our smarter balance tests coming up. It doesn't affect my area. I teach foreign language. So I'm kind of out of the loop with all this stuff. But you had made a comment, Kate, about the teachers getting it, and to some degree they do. But unfortunately, people in my profession do not stand up and do that, because I have a lot of them now saying, well, I don't like standardized testing. And whereas before, I was the only one saying it because it was disrupting my classes, because I have 9 through 12. You take all the 11th graders out the whole week. What am I supposed to do? Stop teaching? You know, and now a lot of teachers are starting to say that. But where are the guts of the people to stand up to the State Board of Ed and say, we don't want this? And I don't see that in my profession, unfortunately. And it is a shame.
Yeah, so. I totally agree. I mean, I think I've spent plenty of time talking about how the profession wears students down. But from my experience, it wears teachers down too. As far as, how big or small they feel inside it. And I was telling this story recently, maybe it was just to Jody Underwood, who I interviewed this morning. I was a graduate student, and I was getting a master's degree in educational leadership. And I was in my class, this was like 10, 12 years ago, with a bunch of public school teachers, new public school teachers in Massachusetts and New York. And all they had was horror stories. They were all there because I think it was a requirement at the time. It might still be that you need to get your master's within 5 years of starting your career. So these were new teachers who were supposed to be at their most energetic and idealistic. And it was just, I walked away from, that experience having learned this lesson that this is not, if you want to be excited about this, if you want to be independent, this is not the place. Now, maybe Massachusetts and New York are worse states than most, and I think the consensus at an event like this would be that they are. But that was really transformative for me because I was teaching in private school, and I didn't feel like I was making it until I got into the public school, until I was certified to teach history in a public school.
It's so weird, isn't it?
It's weird for me today, but that was... I mean, the only lesson that I learned in graduate school came from the students, and it was, that this really sucks the life out of you, the enthusiasm out of you. And, I appreciate you. You've been on the show a few times now, or your voice has been on the show. We interviewed you once at Porkfest. You spoke up at a speech I gave at this event 5 years ago that, you're still doing it, and you're still energetic, and you're still speaking out. So people like me and Kate appreciate that, I'm sure.
Thank you. I'm trying. I mean, they look at me as the weird right-wing person, but I think people are starting to understand, and, it's a shame that the people in my profession, we all have degrees. We've all been to college. We're supposedly smart, in quotes, and they don't stand up.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes things have to get really, really bad before people start to take action.
That's true.
That's a beautiful note to end on. It's always darkest before the dawn.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Brett.
Thank you, Pam. Appreciate it. Okay, that's the end of hour one. We're going to take five, and we'll be back with Jeffrey Tucker.